All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our recording of the Miyanaka Mixer. My name is Black, one half of the crew. Second half of the crew goes by Stinator.
That's me.
All right, we unfortunately missed our podcasting on Saturday, so due to that, we are going to record about the anime that came over the weekend. And as I say that, actually, let me start off with asking this: how was your anime watching over the weekend, Stinator?
Actually pretty good. I watch new episodes, obviously, but I watch a few episodes of Space Dandy and some Black Lagoon.
Oh, okay. Black Lagoon. That's a pretty good one. Everybody loves Remy. Who doesn't like a woman who knows how to dual wield? What can I say?
And like the, actually on Funimation they have the uncut version, so yeah, it's
Oh.
true to form.
That has to be good. I'm pretty sure that's a good watch. Yeah, me personally, I was watching old school anime. I think it came back out in the 80s. It's called Record of Lotos War. It popped up on Crunchyroll, and I was like, I've always liked to watch the old school anime. It's just, something that always caught my eye, especially with watching so much of the more modern anime. And it so far it's been pretty good for it to be old animation. The storyline seems pretty solid, and the show is holding true for it to be such an older animation style. But I've enjoyed it so far.
You said that's an 80s anime?
Yeah, I think it came out like I want to say like 89, 90, like it was right there on that borderline. It's pretty old. Like that's going on a solid 20 something years. But like I said, it's pretty good. I've enjoyed it so far. And it breaks away from your traditional anime mode. So for the most part, I've liked it. I've enjoyed it.
Good.
All right. So we're going to be doing this recording based on the weekend anime. So starting from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We would do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on Thursday. Sorry, Thursday recording will cover those few days for sure. But this recording, since we did not record on Saturday, we'll cover the weekend anime. So without further ado, let's go ahead and crank on into this. Anime I want to start with first will be Record of Grand Crest War. Now, the thing about Record of Grand Qu Crest War, it's a war. Literally, it has it in the title. And the one thing that I've always been able to determine about the show itself is keeping my eye on the three parties. One of the parties is the, let me see, one of the parties is the Alliance. The second part of the group, should I say, keep your eye on is the Union. And the third part is the Artuk Treaty. So now our protagonist starts in the Artuk Treaty. We're going to call that the A Treaty for now so that I don't have to keep bubbling over that water. But our main character is basically part of that. The anime starts off with giving you a backstory of how the war started. Basically, the Alliance and the Union were going to marry. One had a son from one side, the other one had a daughter from the other side. They decided to marry them together to end the war that they were in currently, to try to bring, happiness to the land and all that good stuff. All of a sudden, the Chaos Darkness starts up, which is a whole other entity with basically dark magical powers and stuff like that, shows up and goes the whole wedding and basically kills the fathers of the two groom and the bride. So with that, the daughter that basically goes on a rampage and she's like, nope, this can't happen. And with her father being basically killed off, she's like, you know what, we're going back to war. I think this is a setup. I don't believe you. We're going back to war because of this. So now you have these three forces. You have the main character coming into this and literally becoming this basically leader of all of it in a sense. And he becomes the leader of the Arctic Treaty. Now, we're a good solid, I want to say 20 episodes into this. Actually, it's 19 exact. So there's a lot of battles that went on. We're not going to break down all the battles and stuff like that. But we do want to talk about the most recent episode. Because in the most recent episode, there was a pretty big change. So, Stinator, how did you feel about episode 19? Episode 19 was named The Awakening of a Noble. Me personally, there was you got to see a side of somebody that I never expected, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, like I don't know how I feel about that though.
About referring to his like him. The person we were referring to is the union's leader. The union's leader goes by Alexis. It's like Alexis Count something, you know, because they're all royalty. But his name, his first name is Alexis. We know that for sure. But what do you didn't like how he came out, or what was it exactly?
Not like what he did was okay and stuff. I just, I don't know, it seemed like about face, kind of.
180 in a sense.
Wait, say that again?
It was a 180 basically,
yeah,
from what he normally was.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, a bit out of character, you think.
Yeah, I agree. It was different seeing him. Throughout this entire war, the leader of the Union, his name is Alexis, and the leader of the Alliance, her name is Marine. Yeah, Marine. Mm-hmm. Those two were the ones who were destined to marry. Due to Marine's father being killed via the Chaos disaster, she goes her own route, and it basically separates them. Now, you can see throughout the entire anime, they basically have love for each other. They both like each other. Like, no matter how you look at it, they both have feelings for each other. But literally, Marine's basically being stubborn. And due to her stubbornness, basically is keeping the war going in a sense.
You gave me the whole weekend?
I'm doing a podcast.
And so basically with that, it literally becomes almost a tug of war between two sides who basically want to be with each other. And it's like, I can't believe that they actually are going, you know, toe to toe. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense. They both want to be with each other, but both have stubborn reasons to the fact that they don't really want to be with each other. And it's crazy. Like, they both love each other. They both know it. It's like, why don't you just get back together?
It's like senseless fighting. Yes. Yeah. Love, no. It's like, just go on a date already.
Right. Like, you guys like each other. What's the point? But yeah, due to this, basically in episode 19, Alexis, we're going to call him, it's pronounced Alex, but it's spelled Alexis. So I'm just going to say Alex, just so we don't get too confused. But basically, he basically starts to get the gumption, and instead of basically wallowing in his pity and, oh my goodness, I want to be with Marie. He finally decides to knuckle up, basically strap up his boots and go to actual war, go out. Now, prior to this, basically the A Treaty has basically been fighting all these other battles, trying to keep the Alliance away from the Union and, you know, how wars go. Everybody's trying to make their power move their kings and queens into the right places and all that stuff to get the upper hand. But now the Union and Alex is basically stepping into the fray. So the one thing we see with this episode is Alex basically orchestrating the Union army, basically like, I want to say, similar to like an orchestra. Is that the best way to say it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, similar to an orchestra. And you see him basically literally running circles around his first battle. He literally is basically destroying the guy that he had to fight against. And you're just like, well, where was all this at first? Where's that same energy? We needed that like solid like 15 episodes ago. Why? Where were you now? You know? And it's weird. It's like Thinator said, it's like his whole attitude changes. We get why his attitude changes. He's finally like, you know what? I'm going to fight for this woman. I love this woman. I want to be with her. But it's like the 180 is so much so late out of left field. So many people did die. Like, where were you when all this stuff was really popping off? So it really is weird nonetheless, but it is cool to see him mobilize and get off his butt and start fighting.
Yeah. Like, that's another thing about this anime, like the strategy they use, like the battle tactics, is all interesting and cool to look at.
Yeah, if you like movies about war and movies about, you know, anime about magic, wars, and things like that, you will enjoy it. Like I said, the high praise, the battles that go on, the individual battles, have really, really great animation. Like, seriously, like, there was one battle in the anime where I literally just, like, stopped moving. It was just like, wow, look at this go. And it's been praised pretty good. I remember seeing something on Crunchyroll, and Crunchyroll posted, it was just like, look, just watch this for a minute. Like, no words need to be said. Just watch. So it's been pretty good. And like I said, the characters are pretty lovable. Theo, who is the MC of the group, literally is one of those guys that it's impossible to root for. You know, he's there, he's fighting. And again, he gets thrusted into this. He only just came to literally just figure out things about his own his old town and how to save his own town. He gets thrusted into an entire war and basically becomes the leader here. So it's an enjoyable anime. You start loving the characters and everything that they go through. And literally, you have three sides to choose from. You pick one and go with it.
It's funny because speaking of Theo, I like Silica. Silica?
Silica. Mm-hmm.
I like her better than Theo.
Why is that? I mean, Silica, she's like, I like the fact that she knows what she wants. Yeah. And she supports Theo, but yet she's sort of like in reality, she's sort of like greasing the wheel. She's making sure everything's staying afloat. And I like that about her because she knows what she wants and she knows what Theo wants.
Yeah, it's just like she's kind of using him as a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she's using him to get what she wants and stuff. And, you know, the side benefit for him, though, he gets what he wants.
Very true. They end up understanding that they're using each other in a sense. But that thought process of using each other ends up turning into a friendly relationship that actually blossoms into a romantic relationship. They are officially a couple, yet they won't tell the army that because they just don't want to cause any chaos later on and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Besides, you know, the little side stories are pretty cool. And there's been a lot of side stories about different couples and stuff like that. And my own personal thought behind the situation with Marine and the other guy that ended up passing away. I'm not cool, but we'll break that down on another day. Trust me, because that's a rant that I'm going to go on sooner or later about this show. But nonetheless, the show has been really good. Like I said, episode 19 is out. We're already into the second season. It's rolling right on through. So it's a good anime you should check out. I've enjoyed it. If we're going on a rating system from 1 star being the worst and 5 stars being the best, probably put it at a solid 3.9, so almost 4 stars. It's really good. It's really enjoyable. So
3.5 is like a solid. Where is that right now?
Yeah. So I say 3.9, you say 3.5. Clearly we're rating it pretty high because it's good to watch. So all right. So that's that with Record of Grand Crest War. So now from Friday, we shoot straight on into Saturday. And Saturday brings all the power hitters. We all know this. So with Saturday going, let's go ahead and jump into the one anime I think we all love. My Hero Academia.
The goal!
As of right now, me and Stendator have both agreed that this anime will be on the top of everybody's GOAT list. And if you don't know what GOAT is, greatest of all time. This anime has been ridiculously fun to watch, and I've enjoyed every single second of it. Like, hasn't been let up or anything like that. Right now, it is currently into season 3. If you have not watched season 1 or 2, you are lacking very big. Seriously,
change that
needs to be fixed. Like, you might even have to cut off our podcast. Literally, go and watch it, and then start the podcast over because spoilers are coming up. So, fair warning: if you did want to watch it, this anime you've been looking at, don't listen to us rant about this. You know, don't listen to us rant because we're going to get into this because this is that show. And we wouldn't steer you wrong with it. This is that show, trust me. So the latest episode, how did you feel about the latest episode, sir? Because there was a lot going on.
All right, I think we should go back first and like break down what this show is first, because this is the first time we had it on our podcast.
Very true. Ah, I like the way that you think. This is why you are the second half. This helps tremendously. All right, so My Hero Academia. We start off basically watching the story of a hero. Literally, let's see. Are we going to go by his actual name or his nickname? I say his nickname because it's a little bit easier.
Yeah, it's easier to call him Deku.
Yes. Izuki Midoriya. And so, but unfortunately, we'll explain why his nickname becomes Deku. So, Izuki Midoriya is basically born into a world of superpowers. Literally about 90% of the population has superpowers and they're born with them. It's not something that you get like via like a mutant X gene that just comes along. Nope, they're born with quirks, and that's what they call their superpowers. They're called quirks. So they're born with them. They use them. It's part of society. It doesn't look weird. Everybody knows about them. So unfortunately, our protagonist, we find out, is one of the 10% that doesn't have a quirk. So you can imagine in a world where superheroes are basically commonplace, not having a quirk sort of puts you behind the eight ball nonetheless.
Especially when your only dream in life is to become a hero.
Pretty hard to become a hero with no superpowers. Sort of, yeah. Sort of difficult.
But luckily for our hero Deku, he doesn't need power, right?
Something like that. You get to watch Deku basically become, he's a huge fanboy. He loves superheroes. He loves superpowers. He literally analyzes every hero. We find out that this becomes a very, very important trait to who he is. He basically, well, you know, what else do? You don't have powers, then you, of course, you idolize the people that do have powers. So literally, he idolizes all the superheroes, their powers, their abilities, and he knows their strengths and weaknesses, just like if he was a, you know, he had superpowers.
Like,
and go ahead.
Say if you were looking at stats on a video game, that's pretty much where his brain is. You can see the stats of the different characters, their strengths, their weaknesses, how they do things. Like, that's, he's already analyzed that, and, you know, he's just in middle school now.
That is an excellent analogy, because that's exactly what it is. Literally, he knows the stats. He knows your speed. He knows your strength. He knows your ability. It's a little scary almost, but fanboys will be fanboys, so we understand why he does what he does. Now, you would think that, of course, with Deku being a fanboy, he has to have a favorite hero, right? Of course he does. Of course. Who doesn't have their favorite hero? Well, in Deku's case, his favorite hero happens to be one of the greatest heroes of his generation. And that man goes by the name of All Might. The reason that Deku is liking All Might is because no matter what happens, All Might always saves people with a smile on his face. Now, it's not difficult to be All Might. All Might literally is this big, burly, buff dude who looks like a G.I. Joe pastel. And it's pretty obvious why you could like this guy. He saves people with a smile. He's crazy strong. He can jump like crazy. He's one of those guys, of course, you want to be when you're growing up. And so naturally, of course, Deku idolizes this guy. Everything about All Might he wants to be, whether it's eating cereal like him, being his own costume like him, all that stuff, just like you would. Just like how we are in regular generations, we idolize Batman, Superman, same concept for Deku. He idolizes All Might just like that. So the story of Deku basically in the beginning where, you know, school and stuff like that, just like any kid would, he deals with a little bit of bullying. And it's a little bit different for him because naturally, without him having a quirk, Deku is bullied a little bit more than normal people. It turns out that literally his childhood, I guess you could consider friend, in a sense, maybe we'll say frenemy. We'll say frenemy.
Yeah.
He basically went to school with since elementary. It was called, his name is Bakugo. Turns out that he ends up being one of his worst critics. Now, again, he's been knowing this dude since he was a kid. And Bakugo actually becomes one of those guys that you're like, ah, I don't really care for him. He's bullying. He's powerful. He's one of those guys that you're just like, you need to lose. You need to be knocked down a couple of pegs. Well, believe it or not, we find out in the first few episodes that those pegs were knocked down pretty quickly. So as the journey begins, Deku ends up basically crashing into his idol, All Might. And due to a twist of fate in a sense, Deku ends up finding out that not only can he become a superhero with a quirk, but he also is going to be trained by his childhood idol, All Might. And he's going to gain the ability of his childhood idol. When we say that's a huge twist of fate, I don't care how you look at it. That's just like me walking out and being like, oh, Batman, I want to be like, or oh, Superman, I want to be like Superman. That's like Superman showing up at my door and says, being, hey, you, I'm going to make you just like me. And it's like, holy, and literally that was the moment that Deku had. But the one thing about this show, it pulls on your emotions. That scene that I was just describing, that whole scene with Deku, you know, basically finding out that he can gain superpowers, that pulls on you, because it's like, here's this kid who's basically bullied and tormented for not having superpowers, and through a crazy twist of fate, ends up finding out that he can become the thing that he's always wanted to become. And it catches up to you.
It really does. Like, All Might's relationship with Deku is one of the greatest parts of the show.
It's literally like son and dad. Seriously, that it's that close, and it's like it makes you root for both characters. It's hard not to like All Might, and it's really hard not to root for Deku. So with this small twist of fate, literally Deku ends up basically fulfilling his dream of going to the prestigious UA, which is basically the highest school for kids with quirks. He fulfills his dream of being able to go to the school. And now the challenge becomes Deku, who, again, hasn't had a quirk his whole life, now gains a quirk. Not only gains a quirk, gains one of the most powerful quirks out there. Now has to basically go through training in order to learn how to use this quirk. Now, when we describe All Might, it's a G.I. Joe on steroids. But this guy is immensely powerful. Like, literally, he's so strong that he could punch the air and the air does damage. So you can imagine seeing this Broly G.I. Joe figurine walking around, and you see this small kid. Obviously, there's going to be some setbacks in trying to learn his power and learn his ability. So you find out about this, and you get to watch Deku as he basically trains his tail off in order to understand and basically accept his power. And so, without going into too much detail about everything, Deku basically starts to train his power. He starts to become, you know, well-known with his abilities and stuff like that, learning what his body can and can't do. Again, we're into the third season, so we don't want to basically talk about everything about it, but just understand the ride that Deku goes on is one of the more enjoyable rides you can watch out there.
It's a roller coaster.
It is. It's a true roller coaster. Highs, lows, valleys, everything you can think about, it's a true roller coaster, but it's enjoyable. Seriously, like every episode has you watch. You get to meet so many other characters. Again, he's going to a school full of kids with quirks, just like him now. And so you have his classmates who all have different quirks. You begin to build relationships. You begin to build romantic relationships with different characters and stuff like that. The show is really, really good to watch. But we want to talk about the most recent episode, because again, even though we understand some people might have watched the anime, we all are up to date. So we want to talk about the most current situation that's going on. All right. So
let's fast forward then.
Yeah, exactly. Let's fast forward to it. So if I'm not mistaken, what was the name of this episode?
Episode 45. What a twist.
And seriously, when we say what a twist, it was one hell of a twist. So how did you feel about the episode? It was so much that was going on, man. Like, seriously. Like,
if I can put it, like, in layman terms, the beginning of the episode was so hype. And, like, the rest of the episode was like a field trip.
Right. Yeah, no. So, literally, just in case people didn't catch the last episode, if you know, they're basically Class 1A is out there training, trying to learn their quirks. As they're training, they literally basically get ambushed by what they're calling, if I'm not mistaken, the Vanguard Action Squad of Villains. I want to say it that way because you have to be able to determine it, but it's called the Vanguard Action Squad of Villains. Literally, they're ambushed as they're training their quirks. And so I'm going to call it the Vanguard. So the Vanguard catches them off guard and literally starts to attack all of the students of 1A. A huge battle ensues with different characters basically fighting different villains. And we end up basically getting to the climax of the battles that are going on. So we find out exactly why is the Vanguard attacking the students? You know, besides being villains, normally villains always have some type of motivation. And we get to find out why. Not only were the Vanguard Action Squad basically trying to kill some of the students on a certain list, so literally they were going after particular students. One being our boy Deku, and we find out that the second one being Bakugo, which again, if we told you in the beginning, it's his childhood basically frenemy. So we find out that they're trying to kill these two. But what we also find out is at the end of the episode prior, they're also trying to capture them. So the plan changes from killing to capturing. And the one person they want to capture is Bakugo. So episode literally begins with Deku, Soji, Deku, and another
Todoroki.
Thank you. Todoroki and oh gosh, the names get so confusing. I go by their quirks. I say hot and cold guy, I say six arm guy. That's how I determine it. So literally six arm guy, hot and cold guy, and Deku basically being thrown at the villain. They literally were like slingshotted at a villain to basically capture him because the villain literally had already captured Dark Shadow guy and Bakugo. So literally they're crashing out of the sky. And as they're crashing out of the sky, they catch the guy that's caught Bakugo and Dark Shadow guy. They literally crash into the ground. But the area that they crash in just happens to have the rest of the Vanguard action squad of villains there. So now you got Deku from a previous battle already jacked up. He's already lost the usage of two of his arms, one of his arms really badly. So you have an injured Deku, you have hot and cold guy, and you got six arms guy. And now they have to go against the other rest of the Vanguard squad who's all healed up and everything. The battle turns nuts.
Yeah.
Like
Dobby with the fire and yep. Toga with the
Toga. And we're gonna call it now. Sorry, this is not a PG-13 or PG podcast. There will be curse words allowed because literally the only thing I could call this chick by is crazy bitch. That is going to be her name. If you hear me talk about crazy bitch, we're only referring to this one girl because literally that label is going to her. She has earned the right to be labeled crazy bitch.
Yeah, she's definitely crazy.
She's like, there's no other name for this chick, right? It literally, crazy bitch literally wants Deku, and it's almost disturbing. Like, this chick is literally wants his blood. If you guys seen the episode, you know what I'm talking about. The bitch is crazy. She wants Deku, and not to mention, again, all these people got quirks, so they're going after these kids, and you just watch an episode, you're like, oh my goodness. So they're fighting. Basically, that fight ends up with them capturing Bakugo, but saving Dark Shadow guy. And of course, the emotions end up popping out because Deku always wanted to make sure that his friends are okay, basically feels some type of way because Bakugo is captured. So the other students end up finding out that he is captured, and they have one still shot of Deku literally pounding the ground with full-blown tears blowing out. And when we talk about emotions, so certain emotions and certain characters always catch up to you, and that was one of them.
Yeah, like, ooh, that scene, that shot of him crying after not being able to say Bakugo, ooh.
That was pretty, yeah, that makes the hair stand up on you, to say the least, so. So literally after that, basically, everybody's trying to recover from the whole battle, stuff like that. People are trying to find out, you know, what's their motive, what's their goals, what do we do, and all that stuff. Deku was laid up in the hospital. Again, he was hurt pretty badly, so Deku's now laid up in the hospital. By the time he comes to, he's been visited by absolutely everybody waiting for him to wake up. His mom has been there. Some of the teachers have been there. And when he finally wakes up, all the students of Class 1A, minus Bakugo and a couple other injured characters, are basically there to greet him. Of course, the first thing that this guy thinks about, he's thinking about the little kid that he saved in his first battle that jacked him up. First thing he says, where is Kota? Kota being the little boy of one of the teachers that basically were basically helping them to train and stuff like that. First thing he asks, that's the real sign of a hero. Hero doesn't think about himself. Hero thinks of others.
True hero.
Right. And it's just like, wow, you just literally came out of a mini coma and you're thinking about the kid that you saved and how is he doing? we tell you he's going to be the GOAT one day. We can see it. Yeah, like literally just like you said, the first like 10 to 15, I'd say maybe 10 to 12 minutes of the anime was the climax of that battle. And after that, everything slows down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We get to find out that due to other students and their abilities and their quick thinking and stuff like that, that now the police and the actual adult heroes have a way to track down Bakugo. And with that, our man All Might is stepping up to the plate. And that one, the one screenshot and the one words he said, "I'm ready to counterattack." When I watch him say that and become into Big All Might, I said, "Oh, shit is about to go down. He's about to go down." Like you know he's pissed. You know he's pissed.
The thing I like about this anime the most is that as soon as you think like, "Oh, this is so cool," and this is so dope, they raise the stakes right after.
Exactly. You think, oh, you think you're on level B? And now we're going to take you to level A in the most epic way possible.
It's like, as soon as you think like, okay, it can't get better than this right now, you know?
Right.
They'll prove you wrong.
It's like the ultimate you thought, like, no, we're going to get better, all right. We're going to pick this up a little bit. Yeah, and it's so good. So basically, the next episode, basically, Deku's healed, and you already know the one thing he wants to do. He wants to go find Bakugo. So the next episode is basically about trying to figure out if they should go after Bakugo, if they should leave it to the adult heroes, or if the kids should go after him. You know, the students of 1A, don't get me wrong, they've been through their own battles and stuff like that. They're pretty strong in their own right, but they just got out of pretty harsh battle right now.
At the end of the day, they're still high school students, basically freshman students,
right,
going after pro villains like grown people,
like grown people, like people that had lives and stuff like that. So you know, there's basically, you know, they have to make a decision, and that's literally how the episode ends. So we know the hype is going to be real. We know All Might's getting ready to knock some asses out. Guaranteed, he's going to fuck some shit up. We know it's coming. We know it's coming. So it's like a matter of, okay, when is this going to go down? And when All Might unleashes, oh yeah, you know somebody asking for it. It's automatic.
I mean, the last time we seen All Might get active was one of the best fights of the series.
Oh, man, that All Might versus Noble battle? Oh my God. Gosh, them boys was going at it. Don't you want to talk about hands? Boy, they was going at it. They literally, All Might knocked this dude into a second season. That's basically what happened. Literally, the next time we even heard about dude was into the second season. That's how far he knocked him. He knocked dude months ahead of him. He knocked him into the future. That's how bad it was. So when we say All Might got hands, he got hands. He got hands. He like Mike Tyson. If Mike Tyson was mixed with Incredible Hulk,
that's look, they the don't call him the number one hero for nothing.
Exactly, he holds his own. Trust. He earned that spot, relatively. So understand. Next episode, we already know it's gonna be lit. Trust me, we will make sure that we record on Saturday so we can talk about it pretty soon, because we're preparing for an episode of littiness. It will happen. So again, My Hero Academia, if we're going from a rating system from 1 to 5, it is easily a 5-star anime. I have no doubt in my mind that if you watch it, you are going to enjoy it. Do you agree, Stenator?
Yes, like 5 stars easily.
Easily.
Halfway through season two, I was like, yeah, this one's shit
right here. Right. And we seriously, it's one of those shows that once you start watching, you're not going to put down. We've had many, many other friends start to watch it. We hashtag join us. Seriously, we've had many, many friends begin to watch this, and every one of them was like, why in the hell was I not watching this sooner? It's a great anime, and it has the juice. It has the juice. It has the sauce. It has whatever you think it should have. It has it. So look forward to watching My Hero Academia. You can catch it on a lot of platforms, but I watch mine on Crunchyroll. You know, there's also Funimation and Crunchyroll, VRV, if I'm not mistaken. So there's a lot of places.
I think it's on Hulu, too.
It's on Hulu as well. Yep. So make sure you guys are trying to, you know, try your best to watch these on sites that actually get paid. Because remember, that ends up going back and, you know, counting credits towards these animators and the animation and stuff like that. So make sure your voice is known in some way, shape, or form. All right. So also on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken, Case Closed popped off. Do we want to talk about Case Closed? I know you're up to date on Case Closed.
Correct? Yeah, we could talk about Case Closed.
Go 4. Case Closed is on episode 902. I do not know the name of it off the top of my head.
Yeah, it was a finishing part of a two-parter episode.
Okay, break it down for us.
So basically, last episode, Ron's dad, the sleeping Kogoro Mori, his wife, who he separated from, got kidnapped. And so,
oh gosh! Yeah, man, that already sounds bad from jump.
Yeah, so she, they were planning on going on a date, so they're waiting for her, and they get a message from her, and it says, "I've been kidnapped. I don't know where I am. Please come help me."
So basically, it's like blunt and simple. I like it.
Yeah. And so you get last episode, she was hiding and these guys are searching for it. And then, so like she doesn't have her own phone. So they're playing on this little messaging app. Like, oh, I'm the real one and stuff. So confusing them. But leave it to Conan to decipher who's the real one. So once he deciphers who's the real one, he starts asking her questions to figure out her location. And so, like, this episode, they get closer to finding her.
Mm-hmm.
But while they are getting closer to finding her, her hiding spot may be in danger, but luckily she gets saved by being hungry.
by actual being hungry, as in like wanting food.
Yes, like her stomach growls. So one of the dudes that's looking for her is like, he's fat. So the other guy, like, oh, what's going on and stuff. Like, are you really hungry and stuff? Let's get out of here. Let's go check another one and stuff.
I like the way this is going already.
So they finally get out of the room that she's hiding in, and she risks a call to Conan. Conan is talking to her and asking her to tap her phone so she doesn't make any noise to answer his questions. They finally find out where she is, and she hangs out the window telling them where she is. So you think, oh, okay. Well, they found her. She's safe. Let's go. The head kidnapper, he's not too happy about that, so he snatches her up.
Which is what a kidnapper is supposed to do.
Yeah, he snatches her out the window. And as soon as he goes to hit her with the taser, Kogoro Mori hops through the window, does some judo moves, and saves his wife.
Of course.
It's one of the best moments. So he knocks.
So that was the action scene, basically, of the anime right there. That was the action scene of that episode.
Yeah. And also, another action scene. Because, like, the other two see the boss get knocked out. They dip out, obviously. They're like, okay, we're not messing with this guy.
So say no more, fam. I'm going to just dip out stage left. It's cool. Nah, you don't even – nah, it's good. I don't need to rock with you. Nah. I get it. I saw him get knocked out. I'm all good.
So they try to run to the garage, but Conan and Ron break into the garage while they're trying to escape. And Ron, who is a karate master, is not too happy with how these fools treated her mom, you know? So, yeah, she had to teach them some lessons.
So they got caught here not once, but twice.
Yeah. Those kicks are amazing. Like, so you get a little action this episode, you get the little relief. And then at the end, you get like the little romance because they wanted her to come down to the police station and make a report. But Mori was like, nah, we're going on a date tonight. We're going to the movie and dinner. And then she looked up all happy. She was like, okay, like, I guess I am. But yeah, that's how that case ended. They found her, everything was good and stuff. After the credits, they're back to arguing and bickering again. So yeah.
Sounds just like a normal couple to me.
Yeah. So pretty much business as usual again.
Right. Everything goes back to normal. Now, the good thing about Case Closed is if you're looking for animes that's not going to be finished for a while, or animes that's basically ongoing, Case Closed is the perfect anime for you. Case Closed is literally at episode 902. That's correct. 902 episodes. So if you're looking for something to get in for the long haul, if you enjoy action, murder mystery, and things like that, yes, Case Closed is the anime for you. If I'm not mistaken, Stenator, where does Case Closed rank on your listing of all-time top anime that you like?
Time number one.
That lets you know absolutely everything right there. So if it's on the top of his list, that's something you should go check out for sure. And again, 902 episodes mean that somebody's doing something right if it's still cranking out. Case Closed, check it out. Again, we're going to put a lot of anime in your head to check out, and we are not going to steer you wrong. So go ahead and check it out if you're curious about it. All right, continuing on to Saturday anime. A couple of anime that I know me and Stenator like to watch. I'm going to dive. You know what? We're going to talk about this one because I know we both have mixed emotions about this one. So let's dive into Darling in the Franxx.
Ooh.
Exactly. See, we got some emotions behind this anime. Look at here. Look at here. This is how we gonna break this one down. Look, this anime is basically the biggest love octagon that you can possibly imagine. Seriously, it's like he loves her, but she loves him. She loves she. He loves he. It's flat out nuts. It's literally a bunch of crazed kids with hormones trying to figure out how to protect the world, while actually still trying to learn about their emotions and how they care about each other.
And let's throw in some monsters just for shits and giggles, I guess.
Right. Let's throw in monsters for shits and giggles, and also let's have them pilot robots together.
Yeah.
If anybody has ever heard of the animation studio Trigger, you know how Trigger is. Trigger is the animation studio that gave us one of my favorite anime of all time. Tengen Toppa Gurren Lagann, short, basically Gurren Lagann. And so animation style, similar to that. Action style, storyline style, similar to that. It also gave us Kill la Kill. A lot of people know what Kill la Kill is.
Kill la Kill.
And so, exactly. So a lot of people remember that. So Darling in the Franxx is made by the same studio, which is Trigger. Trigger Studio is pretty popular. Once you see their animation, you know exactly what you're in for. So give a quick synopsis on it. Again, Darling in the Franxx takes place in a ruined wasteland. Earth is basically ruined and basically on the brink of elimination in a sense. Basically, your cities are basically in these mobile fortresses that move around and stuff, looking for resources and things like that. The main storyline talks about Squad 7. I think that's the name of the squad. Let me double check. Yes, Squad 7. And so Squad 7 is basically these group of pilots. Again, in order to pilot a Franxx, which is the big robot, you have to have one male and one female. And so in order to pilot the Franxx, they choose all these kids and basically find out which one is more compatible with the other. Mm-hmm. So we have a group of at least 1, 2, 3, 4. Basically, Squad 7 consists of four, I guess we call it teams, four teams. Now, the leader of this so-called Squad 7, Hito, he's supposed to be the leader of the group. The reason that he's the leader of the group is because each child has a ranking system. They have a number. And so they go by their code numbers. The lower your number is, the more potential you have to pilot this robot. Hito are basically our MC in a sense. It's code number 0013. Wow, it's been so long in the anime that I actually forgot the number that he is.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he is 13.
Yeah,
Ichigo is 16.
Right, Ichigo is 16. So Hiro is code 013. And so we find out that in the beginning of the anime, Hiro for some reason cannot find a pair to basically pilot a Franks. Even though he's a high number, his compatibility is supposed to be really high, he basically can't figure out a reason to why he can't pilot a Franks. We find out later on to why that was, but again, that's so much deeper than the anime. It's hard without you actually watching it to explain it directly. So it's like, something that you'll have to just watch and figure
the,
out.
The lore of this show is like very complicated.
Yes, like, it is a book.
If you don't watch it yourself, you won't understand.
Right. So we're only going to give you small hints at it to get you to try to look at it, check it out, because there's a lot of stuff that deals with it. So, but nonetheless, the squad is a base squad seven. Squad seven ends up growing with each other, being with each other. They support each other. They do things together, similar to how you were if you were a family in a sense, but you know, you're kids, so you can only do so much to each other. And again, these are adolescent kids. So their world is pretty sheltered. Literally, they stay in a dome. They stay in this one area, shelter. Everything is regulated. There's no TV. The books that they're given are only selected books. They're told basically the information that they need to be told from the upper people, which they call the upper guy, which is named Papa. So they're basically regulated and everything's done through it. But these kids have no understanding. In their world, also, there are no adults. I said, when we say adults, literally as an adult, like me and you, if we're older, there are no adults, so they don't ever get to meet adults. They do know that Papa is an adult, but he's rare. But to them, there are no normal adults walking. And so with that, all they know is they're kids, and they never get to be adults, because from what they were told, you never get to see adulthood because you're probably going to die. So for them, they're like, hey, kids, we got to live our lives while we can because it's a possibility that we'll never see adulthood. Everything that this Squad 7 has basically built up all basically gets shot to hell with the addition of 02. And 02, we find out, is one of the more special pilots. 02 somehow basically forms a connection with Hiro, who's the guy that couldn't pilot the Franks. And somehow they are able to pilot one of the more powerful Franks together. And that's where the story of Squad 7 basically begins. Again, we're not going to go into too much detail about it, but just understand that 02, she has her moments. And literally her attitude was not the best attitude to deal with when trying to be a team. So again, let's see. Darling and Franks is into episode 18, so it's into its second season in a sense. And there's a lot of stuff that we're not going to go over via the anime, but we will talk about the most current episode. If you're curious about the backstory, we highly recommend you check it out. It is a trip. Trust me.
It's very interesting.
Yes. When we say emotions, there are lots of emotions. And episode 18 is a perfect example of emotions, nonetheless. So in episode 18... we have one of the squad, one of Team 7, or Squad Team 7, however you want to say it, two of their partners, because again, they're male and female, they decide that they want to get married. Now, again, in the world that they live in, there's no such thing as marriage, because normally in a normal world, when you get married, you decide that you want to get married, you want to create a family. And in their world, they've never been talked about creation, you know, having kids, you know, sexual activities. None of this has been told to these kids. Again, all their information is filtered. So this episode ends up becoming a huge shit show, to say the least, because due to this information somehow getting to these kids, Papa and the rest of the adults that rule over these kids end up basically saying that this is not the best thing that we can do. Because if these kids are basically learning about wanting to procreate and all that stuff, that's going to cause problems with our major plans. So literally the kids decide that they want to marry off two of the major team. They want to get married. And all the kids are like, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's go ahead and get them married and stuff like that. So they all pick assigned roles. One's going to be the priest of, you know, all of them are flower girls, and they're throwing rice and stuff up. Literally, as all this is happening, the powers to be are basically coming to crash the whole wedding. And you get to find out that literally these kids are in for one crazy ride. So as all this is happening, as all this is popping off, literally as the rings are going on to the kids' fingers, Papa's group basically comes in and literally puts a hold to all that. Literally knocking out the two kids that were getting married and basically taking them away. Throughout this entire thing, Zero Two ends up going against her old squad, which are also highly powered humans. The one thing about Zero Two is not your typical human. And to be exact, she's not even a human as is. So to have her watch, she does look human. The only characteristic that makes her look different is that she has two small horns sticking out of her head. So, of course, that looks a little bit weird when everybody else looks human, and you have one girl that has two red horns sticking out. But nonetheless, she does become, I guess you'd say, she does begin to have human traits, and she begins to act more and more like a human as the anime begins. But again, this we're going to only talk about the episode that popped off. So literally, there's this crazy fight between Zero Two and her old squad. She's literally fighting six people at once. The whole time I'm watching it, like, oh, shit is getting real. Like, they fighting, swinging, kicking, throwing. And it ain't no, like, oh, I'm going to just punch you like a normal human being. Nah, these is, like, Jet Li kicks and Mike Tyson punches to everybody's face. Like, everybody's catching hands. And it was pretty crazy. Like, wow, I didn't think Zero Two knew how to get down like that. But the rest of her squad, again, she's going against six other people, maybe even seven. And only, you know, one versus seven. Sorry, you're not going to win that often, you know. So, literally, she gets taken out. The two that were going to get married into the beast is getting taken away. The next time that Squad 7 sees the two basically have no memories, no recollection of anything. They don't even know who each other are. We find out that literally their memory was erased, similar to what we find out in a backstory of how Hito and Zero Two's memory were erased. So we find out that that same thing happened. And to me, I think that was probably one of the more sadder moments of the anime, personally. What about you?
Yeah. this episode ended off on a depressing note, and like I real feel bad for these dudes because they're just trying to have like a little moment of happiness in like this fucked up world,
right?
And they can't even do that shit without fucking being attacked and propagandized and, you know, used as tools for the humans, for the adults.
And it's pretty fucked up because literally they're out there when they pilot these franks, they're going against these creatures. They're called colossal swords or something like that. And these creatures can literally be from the size of a house cat to the size of literally a miniature town. That's how big these fuckers are. And they're out there risking their lives, literally can be killed. They've seen other teams get killed off completely. And they're yet they're risking their lives, and they can't even do something as simple as try to keep each other happy. So when we say the emotions pool is pretty crazy, they end up becoming very close to each other, Team 7. They end up becoming so close, and you find out that literally all these kids are basically growing up with each other in a sense, and other feelings arrive. I think the crazier part was when one of the teammates confesses her love for her other teammate. Yes, so girl on girl, yes, literally confesses her love finally to this teammate, which I personally knew was going to happen. I knew from jump she liked her. I did. Yeah, I don't know if I ever told you, but I just knew from jump just the way her reaction was. We're going to call her the chick with the glasses. So, chick with glasses, literally, I knew her emotions from jump. I was like, she likes Ichigo. It's obvious she likes Ichigo. Ichigo has not even paid her no mind. But
It's funny because Ichigo is all about Hero, and then she got two people on her that
right, and that's where the triangles go. Let's see if we can connect the triangles really quickly. So the way it goes is, if we're starting with the main character, so Ichigo, no, not Ichigo, Hito likes Zero Two. Hito and Zero Two are basically they're the partners together.
So Zero Two, Hero right. And Zero Two are together. They both like each other.
They both like each other. They both agree to that. They find out that they've been liking each other for a long time. They met each other when they were younger. Their memories got erased. And now that they got older, they found each other again. So in a sense, they consider it to be fate. Now, Ichigo likes Hito. Ichigo's always liked Hiro from jump. She's always wandered behind him, always liked him, always wanted to be with him. There's a huge triangle between Ichigo, 02, and Hiro, because that literally for the first season is basically what the first season revolves around. Ichigo mm-hmm. tries everything in her ability to make sure that Hiro does not like 02. And personally, literally, me and Stintnator created the hashtag fucking Ichigo because of her emotions. I was pretty pissed watching season one and leading into season two when I saw the way she was acting, because I just like it looked so grimy, you know, like her attitude was like, no, bitch, like stay in your lane, like LeVar Ball, stay in your lane, like these two are good, like they like each other, they cool, stay in your lane. But she did so much, like kissing him, and it's just like, I can't believe you're going that far, like, bro. Not to mention that, again, we just said that Ichigo had not one but two other people that liked her. So that's what made it even worse. Like, he had her partner, Goro, who's always like Ichigo. But not mm-hmm. to mention that not only did Goro confess that he liked Ichigo, and Ichigo can only think about Hiro, but the glasses girl finally confesses in episode 18 that she likes Ichigo. And both times, Ichigo still hasn't said how she feels about these two people, because she only got eyes on Hiro. And you're just like, oh my goodness, like this is nuts. When we said I love Octagon, we weren't kidding. Oh, we got an, hold on, wait, there's more relationships in this thing. So the craziest relationship that might have took the craziest turn, you have, I can never remember her name. Let me see if I can find it really quickly.
You mean Kokoro.
Thank you. You knew it off the top of my head. Kokoro, being the long hair, I guess you consider the stereotypical long hair, quiet with the, you know, the big boobs type of character. She just don't know what she wants. So she was paired with our heavyset friend, the typical stereotypical big boy who's a little bit more rounder than he is tall. So they were original pairs, teammates. Midway, I say maybe episode 5, Kokoro finds herself catching slight feelings for another one of her other teammates. The other teammate is a boy that we ended up, I put two and two together, but the boy ends up liking Hiro. So yeah, you got boy on boy, you got girl on girl, you got girl on boy, you got boy on girl. We told you this is an octagon.
Anyway, everywhere you turn, there's someone liking another person.
The story, that's what we said, like literally check this out, because it's one of those stories that you start to watch and you're like, oh my goodness, there's so much unfolding, it's nuts. So Kokoro basically ends up, I want to switch partners, I want to go with him. Hurts the fat boy so much. Oh man, it broke his little heart. It's really like
God for the dude.
I did too, because it really hit him to a core. He really liked Kokoro, and it was just like, dang, he just left him in the dust.
It's not like he just told her he will protect her for the rest of her life or anything.
Right. And then he was like, I will protect you. She's like, I want another partner. It was like, oh, word? Oh, okay. So now listen to how this octagon goes. So now our chubby guy ends up basically becoming partners with Glasses Girl. Remember, Glasses Girl likes Ichigo. And now the boy that ends up liking Hiro is now paired with Kokoro, who likes him. So these are how, when we say it's octagon, the storylines are crazy for the people that like each other, that don't like each other, the people, just things are getting nuts. The spider web is probably the best way I can sum it up. It is a spider web of threads that connect to either each other in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, when we say this anime is pretty complicated, it is. It's not complicated to watch because you pick up on everything within your first three episodes, guaranteed. But trying to explain it and trying to explain all the relationships and how people are connected, you would have to watch it to see, because we can talk to you about it. You're not going to catch on unless you watch a couple of episodes. And you're like, ah, now I get what they mean. So with going into episode 19 of Darling in the Franxx, basically, the kids are leaving and they're basically getting ready to prepare for what looks like a battle in a sense. We don't know yet of what they're going to be battling, but nonetheless, this whole thing of trying to figure out why two of their teammates have lost their memories becomes a little bit more of a more pressing matter, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's how episode 18 of Darling in the Franxx wrap up. Let me see. If we're doing a star rating, which we do our star rating. Let's do our Mayonaka mixer. So we're going from light to dark, with obviously 5 being the darkest, or midnight in a sense. I would probably rate this one more. I give it more closer to 3 stars.
Yeah, I'll probably give it for where it is right now, a 2.5.
Okay. And it's not, we're not saying that it's bad, understand. No. Like it's a pretty good show. But the thing is, you have to watch it so that you do understand that, okay, there are storylines that need to be known. I think, me personally, the one thing I love about it, I love Zero Two. Like, I won't deny it. Like, mm-hmm. Zero Two is a character that literally, like, it's hard not to like her. She has a really bright smile when you're watching it. Her attitude literally sort of gets the anime more bubbly. And it's hard to believe because literally she's not even human. So it's like, she, of all characters, is that character that you like. Stands like, out because she just stands out no matter what she does.
Like her saying, "Darling," is
exactly
the best thing. To...
Darling, darling, and it's like, okay, that's catchy and it's cute. And you're like, okay, you can't help but to like it. So, my personal favorite of the show has been Zero Two. Obviously, I have my hatred hashtag fuck Ichigo, but you know, I won't hate her for. I'm starting not to hate her as much, but nonetheless. That's the type of anime it is. It gets you to like characters, it gets you to hate characters, which clearly means that character development is key in an anime like this.
It's a very character driven show.
Yes, and it is enjoyable nonetheless. The storylines sound complicated because we're talking to you about them, but nonetheless, you catch on to them very quickly. They do an excellent job of basically letting you know who likes who. You can pick up on it as quickly as we did, so... And it's pretty cool. Not to mention that if you're into the mecha anime, basically mecha referring to giant robots and stuff like that, you do get that. All this happens in a 24-minute span. You got emotions, you got love triangles, you got fighting, you got robot animes. Trust me, all this happens in different episodes. So it is enjoyable. Again, it's on season 2, and the next episode will be episode 19. So Darling in the Franxx is something you should check out if you like more complicated anime, more adult anime, and if you like, you know, you like your occasional chuckle in your anime, by all means, check it out. So, all right. I want to crash into one anime that's personally my favorite. I don't think you've caught on to it yet, Stinator, but it's my personal favorite because I love the game and I really want people to check it out. So I'm going to do a brief synopsis on Persona 5, the animation.
Persona 5!
Now, when I tell you this, I think if the majority of people have heard of the Persona series, Persona series is basically a video game series. If I'm not mistaken, they call it a JRPG, which serves to a junior role-playing game, mainly having like kids.
That's not what JRP stands for.
Oh, I'm sorry. What does it mean then?
Japanese.
I learn something new every day. I always thought it was for junior, but hey. No,
Japanese role-playing game.
I learned something new. All right. So, Japanese role-playing game. So Persona 5 is based on basically the games itself. So, as of right now, Persona has up to, obviously, 5 different versions of Persona itself. And so, Persona 5 is the 5th version, and the game dropped last year. If I'm not mistaken, it dropped last year in April. This game was immensely popular, and for a lot of people were waiting on Persona 5 because there was such a huge gap in between Persona 4 and Persona 5. And so with that, Persona 5 basically dropped with like critical acclaim. When I say that this game was in the running for best game of the year, that's how good it was. So it was that good. Its soundtrack, I think, won runner-up soundtrack, video game soundtrack of the year. It literally won runner-up. And, of course, it won Best Award for JRPG. But what they did was, due to the popular demand, they decided to basically put the video game into animation form. Hence why we now have Persona 5 the Animation. And Persona 5 the Animation overall The one thing that I enjoy about it is that the beautiful pictures that you get on the video game is now conveyed into animation form for 24 minutes. And there is no drop off. This show literally gets you engulfed into beautiful color animation. If you like to watch stuff in high definition, check out Persona 5 animation in high definition. Right now, I believe it's on episode 7, and basically, it just plays out the game. It basically literally puts the video game that you possibly put 100 plus hours into, it puts it into animation form. And when I say it's a beauty to watch, from intro to exit, the music's catchy, literally it's everything that the video game you will want in animation form in 24 minutes each episode. So I recommend people to check it out. I'm not going to go into a breakdown of it too much, but literally when you see it, the first thing that catches your eye is the animation, the colors, and it's really good. If I'm putting it on a star level from 1 to 5, I'm putting it probably at a 4 or 4.2. It's that good. Yeah, it's really good. And if you like know anything about the Persona series, you're going to enjoy Persona 5, I guarantee.
I assume that would be like a gimme 5 for you.
Yeah, it's. I think the only reason I put it into a 4.2 instead of not just a direct 5 is because I don't know how far it's going to go into it. I don't know if it's going to be 12 episodes. I don't know if it's going to be 24. Mm-hmm. At the rate that it's going, it's only into episode 7, and they don't even have all the characters yet. So I don't know how long it's going. If the anime ends up going to at least 24 episodes and they do a full portrayal of the game, it's guaranteed going to be top. It's going to be 5 stars no matter what, because the game storyline itself is excellent. So if it goes into 5 stars, then yeah, if they do the full game with all the characters and you find out the complete story, then yes, it gets 5 stars for me. So right now I'm just keeping it at a 4.2, and that's literally just only going based off the animation. So if the animation, if I'm literally make rating it only on animation, that's how good it is. 4.2. So. But yeah, check it out. Personify the animation. I wouldn't steer you wrong with that either. So,
here's a little plug right here. For okay. Since we're talking about video game animes,
okay.
Two anime based on video games that are good watches. Devil May Cry.
And ooh, God okay. Yes, God Eater, I will agree to completely. I actually enjoyed the God Eater anime more than I enjoyed the game. I bought the game due to the anime itself, but man, did I enjoy the anime completely. I literally bought, I believe I watched the anime, finished the anime, and then it was like, you know what? They're based off video games, and went and bought video games.
The anime did its job.
It did. And the animation style was different. It wasn't like your typical animation style. If I'm not mistaken, it had small parts of it was no, actually large parts of CGI, but it was still a really, really good anime.
Yeah.
And it loosely based it off the video games, having some of the protagonists and stuff inside of it and the creature. So yeah, that was really, yes. That's what you call a plug, ladies and gentlemen. That's for sure. That was a really good one. And yes, it's based off of animes of God Eater. I know for sure has 16 episodes. I don't know how many.
It's a 13 episode anime.
Okay, 13 episodes. And I don't know how many Devil May Cry has.
Hold on. Let me check real quick.
I know for sure. I want to say Devil May Cry had maybe 12, but I'm not for sure.
Crap. It's always right here.
When yeah, we'll update. We can update that later. No worries. So
it's 12 anime. It's 12. Okay,
so it's 12. So yeah, and those are both really good video games, and they adapted the anime pretty well. So they did their job, because me watching the anime made me buy their product, and I think normally that's what you want. You do an anime, you want people to find out more about your product and your games and stuff like that to buy more. God Eater did his job. I didn't know anything about the God Eater games, but after watching the anime, I bought God Eater Old School, God Eater 1, and God Eater 2. So it did its part for sure.
Yeah, like I had to cop the game after, and I was like, I would have never found out about this game without this.
Exactly. So it did its part, trust me. You guys sold at least two games to us. You did your part. All right, rolling right along, we're going to continue with the Saturday anime. And actually, I believe this is going to be the wrap-up for our Saturday anime. And after that, we have one more anime for Sunday. But nonetheless, our Saturday anime is literally one of our top three anime that I think me and Stinator likes, and that is One Piece.
One Piece. That's the name of the treasure.
Damn. Seriously. Oh, man, are we going to recite lyrics? We can do lyrics. No, no, we ain't going to go that far. It's been so many openings, we're not going to go that far, but nonetheless. Yeah, and so if you guys have never heard of One Piece, what rock were you living under? Seriously, yeah. If you've never heard of One Piece, then honestly, I don't even think you should listen to an anime podcast, but nonetheless, One Piece, you know, One Piece is that show. We said case closed at 902 episodes. One Piece of 837.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about that life, seriously. And so we are not going to, I refuse to do a backstory on 837 episodes of an anime.
Yeah, we already discussed One Piece. You know who Luffy and the crew is.
Exactly. We're only going to just quickly talk about the most current episode because the most current episode is a filler episode, but nonetheless, it's still good. So,
wait, this wasn't filler.
Yeah, the Big Mom episode. Oh, backstory. Sorry, I apologize. Yes, thank you for correcting me. It is a backstory on basically Big Mom. So it's, you know what? I was sort of mad because the way I look at it is when they do a backstory, it takes away from the current situation that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
But this backstory was actually a really good backstory. I was shocked because the past. Yeah. What, two episodes have been backstory on Big Mom, but it was enjoyable backstory.
That's a crazy thing because going into Whole Cake Island, I wasn't sure like what we're gonna get out of this. I'm like, yeah, Oda like presented it as Year of Sanji and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so surprised that I liked this as much as I did because the whole crew wasn't there. But right. it's one of my favorite arcs now.
It's a really, really good arc. Like it's been a pretty long arc as well, but it is a really, really good arc. Just like you said, like half the crew isn't there. You know, half the crew split it up when they were on Zoe. So I mean not Zoe, when they were on what island was that? Rosa? Elephant Island.
That was Dressrosa when they first split up.
No, when they went to the elephant, when they took off to the elephant island, the island on the back of the elephant.
Oh, Zoe, that is Zoe.
Okay, so that is Zoe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, half the crew end up basically staying away and basically staying on the elephant while Luffy took off to go after Sanji. So literally, you're only rolling with, for the past roughly 30 or 40 episodes, you have Luffy, you have Sanji, you have Nami, you have Brooke, and you have Chopper. Basically, that's your crew, which made it cool because of Dressrosa, you basically dealt with the other part of the crew, which mm-hmm. was Franky, which was Robin, which was Zoro, and which was
God Usopp.
Yes, Usopp God. Oh, God Usopp. Ooh. So, yeah, which makes it pretty cool. So you're juggling basically between, you know, half a team on this arc, half a team on the next arc, and it keeps it fresh because now you're dealing with these characters and their emotions, and then it switches over. Not to mention that you have the highlight of one character, which being, in this case, Sanji and his arc, and his backstory onto how his family is. So, but I don't want to dive too much into that just because, you know, that, man, we'll be forever trying to talk about that. That's his own world
conversation.
Seriously. And we'll catch up to that when the anime switches back over from the backstory to the regular anime. We'll drop a little bit more knowledge onto, you know, Sanji, his family, and what exactly is going on. But yeah, the filler itself, I mean, not filler, sorry, the backstory of Big Mom. It was slightly sad, but for me, I didn't let it like phase me to that point. I was just like, oh, I feel bad for Big Mom. No, Big Mom evil as hell. She evil as fuck. I don't care how you look at it. She's evil.
She had a bad childhood, but fuck that bitch, okay?
Exactly. Like, nah, you can't, you know, she was, again, so basically the backstory is she wrecked the town. Her parents ended up dropping her off in the island of the Giants. Island of the Giants is basically taken care of by this one woman named Mother Carmel, and basically she watches over the island and stuff like that. Big Mom, we find out from Jump Street, just doesn't get it. Like, she's a little off. She's a little slow. She's literally too strong for her own good. She's literally taking out little children on accident, not even trying to. And so basically backstory is she one day they basically the giants end up basically deciding to fast. They fast for 10 days. And after the 10 days, they basically get to have this huge party and stuff like that. Well, Big Mom, literally being named Big Mom for a reason, she ends up basically not being able to survive the entire fast and ends up basically craving sweets. She ends up craving sweets to the point that she literally almost destroys the entire island. And she kills one of the giants.
So basically, this is just an episode to tell you, like, women are crazy when they get hungry.
Exactly. It is a perfect example of how women get crazy when they are hungry. And it was just like watching this happen. And she was only like no more than like what, 9, 10 at most?
I don't think she was that old.
I don't think she was that old either. She basically set an entire island almost on fire because she was hungry. You're just like, bruh, really? Like, seriously? But nonetheless, again, so it basically goes into that. It talks about how we find out more about Mother Carmel. Mother Carmel actually basically was a peddler of kids. She literally was selling kids to the world government so that they could become soldiers. But none of the kids knew that. So one day, literally, Big Mom, Child, or I guess Big Mom in child form is basically sitting there. She's eating her sweets and stuff like that. After she, like, when she eats her sweets, she goes into like a little mini coma where nothing around her phases her. And after she's done eating her sweets, she comes back to and all the kids are gone and Mother Carmel disappears. And now Big Mom basically ends up walking around finding out that basically she's by herself again for the second time. And that's basically the gist of the backstory, finding out about how Big Mom is and, you know, what made her to become the Big Mom that we all know of in the Whole Cake Arc Island.
Yeah, the Big Mom that we love, that we know and hate.
Exactly, because I surely hate her. Oh my goodness. Talk about an asshole at its finest. Seriously. But yeah, there's so much to go on with One Piece. We will talk about it more once it gets out of the whole backstory arc of it. And I think it'll be done this Saturday. I'm not mistaken. I think the backstory ends, and then the Saturday after that, it'll go back into the whole cake arc. Our Whole Cake Island arc. So we'll be able to talk about it a little bit more. But nonetheless, trust me, you will get your dose of One Piece in this podcast. We promise that. So
yeah, we might go back and break down different arcs if we get some time.
Oh yeah, we will. Trust me. One Piece is that anime we love to talk about. I think we both agree on that.
Yeah.
All right. And so now we break down our Sunday anime, and Sunday for us only carries one anime that we care to talk about, and that is Food Wars. This will be our last anime, so thank you for you guys basically listening along with us up to this point. This will be the last anime that we break down tonight, but it's one of the better animes, so nonetheless, let's get into it. So, Food Wars, the third play, episode 19 was Declaration of War. Literally, we find out that our crew, the Polar Star Dormitory, was basically wiped out. They all lost. It's no easier way of saying it. Literally, we're coming back from Soma's battle. Soma basically beat I can never remember that man's name. It starts Haima? With an H. Yeah, Haima. Haima. How do you pronounce it?
Haima.
Haima. He basically find out at the end of episode 18 that he defeats Haima, and episode 19 is basically the aftermath of what happened. So literally, the majority of Polar Star Dormitory is lost. We find out that Megumi and Adani, which is one of the Italian brothers, they're with Soma as well, along with Irina. And so after finding out that the rest of the dormitory is wiped out, Irina takes off running to go see how Megumi and Donnie brother do, and they find out that those two pass their tests as well. So now you have basically out of the rebels of the entire school, you have Soma, Irina, Megumi, and Aldani. And so this episode was like, I think this might have been my favorite episode up to this point. And I'll explain why as we describe it. But this episode was really, really good. So literally, as we find out that it's only four people left that basically made it to basically survived at this point. I guess you survive the cooking train that they're on. Mm-hmm. We find out that there's four people left. And Irina basically breaks down and she's just like, I don't want the people that I end up basically being able to meet. I don't want them to leave. I don't. So Irina basically finds out that her dad, who is part of, I guess, the anti-faction, the bad guys in a sense, he's the leader of them in a sense. And she basically runs up to him, finds that he's there at the area that they're in, and basically asks him to reinstate all of her friends. Her dad was like, hell no, I ain't reinstating them. I've been working on trying to knock them out for damn near half a season. No, I ain't reinstating them. And right as you think all hope is basically lost, lo and behold, you have two of the more cooler characters appear. Soma's dad, who Irina, we find out, basically had almost like a soft spot and maybe even a crush for.
Yeah, she definitely felt a crush for that dude.
Oh yeah, she's crushing on Soma's dad big time. So not only does Soma's dad appear, but Irina's grandfather also appear. And they both appear, and basically, we want to talk about throwing a monkey wrench into Irina's dad's plans, the evil guy's plans. Basically, what they offer is let the kids basically battle for the chairs of the Elite Ten. Now, the whole plan about the Elite Ten is that the Elite Ten?
Yeah, the Elite Ten.
Just making sure. The Elite Ten basically has full control over the school. Whatever they say goes. So Soma comes up with the idea of, hey, if we, referring to the four of us are left, if we can somehow each win a seat on the Elite 10, we can reinstate all our friends that were kicked off. So Soma's like, let's get it. We're going to get after it. The Donnie brother's like, let's get it. Megan means like, hell nah, we can't do this. Megan means like, nah, bro, you got me twisted. You telling me to take out one of the 10 best chefs that we got at the school? Man, this is all downhill. And with... the one thing I love about Megumi is Megumi, she be like, nah, bro, I can't run with y'all. Y'all on a whole nother level right now. But when it comes time to get it done, she steps up to the plate. I love that little girl with her blue hair.
Yeah, Megumi is one of my favorite characters in the show because
I think she's my second favorite girl out of the whole arc. She's like my second favorite girl. Everybody knows my first, my bae is Alice. So yeah, Alice, everybody knows.
Everybody know that Alice caught that L, though.
Yeah, I'm not happy about that. That last episode hurt my soul a little bit.
She ain't win nothing. She's number one at nothing except for losing.
Nah, man, it's okay, baby. I'll take care of you. Don't worry about it. Yeah, she caught that L along with half the rest of the dormitory. So basically with a little bit of prodding from Soma's dad and Irina's grandfather, they basically figure out to make Irina's dad accept the terms so that the kids can basically fight for the Elite 10 seats. So with that, we end up finding out that, okay, if you're going against the Elite 10, which is basically the top chefs at the school, you guys got to be ready. And so with that, the grandfather, Soma's dad, and one of the other teachers basically like, we're going to train you guys up so that you guys are ready to basically take out these. Now, the cool thing about this is it's not going to just be no normal cooking thing. They call it a shogeki. It's not going to be a normal shogeki. This is going to be a team shogeki. So literally, it's going to be Soma, Irina, Adani, and Megumi all working together to fight the other four. So almost like a battle royale with teams. So it's going to be a pretty cool thing that they have coming up for these next episodes. So these four basically have to basically learn each other's strengths, each other's weaknesses, and learn how to work together. And so with that, the funnier parts of the episode come up. So Soma's dad is crazy. Soma's dad is just like Soma in a sense. Literally half the episode, Soma's screaming at his dad to stop messing up his hair. And Soma's dad is like a little child in a sense. Like if Soma's 16, his dad is 18 years old at heart. Like, seriously, they're like kids. Like, literally,
he's more clashing. He's more of a big brother than a dad.
Than a dad, exactly. And they clash so much, it's not even funny. So the one thing you get to see is hilarious moments with all these adults basically forming into kids, in a sense. You have Soma's dad. I think his name is Jorshiro. We're going to call him Jay. You have Soma's dad, Jay, basically arguing with his old classmate, which is basically one of the higher teachers in the entire school. They end up clashing, and the episode ends up going from, okay, let's train the students so that they can get ready for this team Shogeki, to, all right, which one of us is better in cooking? So literally the granddad's like, all right, I know how to solve this. I'm going to pair y'all up in teams. So literally the teams end up being, for this challenge to find out which of the teachers are better, the teams end up being Irina, Soma, and Soma's dad on the same team. The other teacher, which I can't remember, I think his name is Jin, G-I-N.
No, it was Dojima.
Dojima, right. I think it's Jin Dojima, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's his full name. But Dojima, Megumi, and Aldini, they're all on teams. So the granddad's like, I'm going to be the one who judges this. They end up using one of the kitchens on the train that they're on traveling. And they're like, all right. And the granddad, right before it's about to start, he was like, the one rule you got is, none of y'all could talk to each other while cooking this dish. And the kids look at each other like, wait, what? And the granddad's like, go. And you're like, wait, how are we going to cook a dish without talking to each other? And so now Dojima, basically being the vet that he is, again, he's a teacher. He's high on the totem pole nonetheless. He basically starts to cook. And now Dini brother basically is like, okay. And without even asking for it, gives him an ingredient. And Dojima was like, without saying anything, he gives him that look like, all right, you with the shit. I like you. I fucks with you. All right. So then Megumi, with her always worrying self that I love so much, Megumi's like, can I do it? I can't do this. I can't keep up with him. And then all of a sudden, she's like, wait, I've been doing this with Soma for I don't know how many seasons now. Of course I can keep up with him. And all of a sudden, Megumi jumps into the fray. And Megumi hands Dojima something. And Dojima looks back at her. Aldini looks at them. They look at each other like, we got this. And again, they're not speaking. So they give each other like, all right, let's get this shit. And it was probably one of the cool parts. This episode had many screenshots that I loved about it. Looking at the team, looking at the dynamics, looking at all these people come together to try to do one common goal to take out the entities. And you got to see characters that you don't see much. Again, Soma's dad has sort of been in the wings waiting. So you get to see him full-fledged cooking. You get to see Dojima cooking, because you don't really see him cooking. You get to see the grandfather who got ousted out of the entire school due to Irina's dad. You get to see all these characters you haven't seen in like a solid season and a half come in, and you get to see all these different dynamics playing to each other. So that, along with the comedy that came with it, with Soma and his dad clashing, Sojiro and Dojima going at it head to head, the grandfather being literally the head honcho of it all, basically putting everybody in the check. You get to see Megumi freak out about 10,000 times. You get to see Soma's cockiness. You get to see Irina, and she's going through her whole emotional dispute because she's terrified of her dad. There's so many emotions that come into this episode, and so many different dynamics that it made for a really, really good episode that I enjoyed completely. So,
yeah, it's funny because, like, when you look at the teams when they first started, I'm like, okay, this is whew, clean. Easily, Soma, his dad, and Irina taking this.
Right.
Soma and his dad can't get along.
They can't. They end up fighting within the first, like, 30 seconds, and you're like, oh, my God. Irina's just sitting there looking like,
what to do with this?
Like, how does son and father, mind you, son and father own their, they had a diner together. How in the hell can they not cook together? They work at a diner together.
But then again, when they worked at the diner, they was always competing anyway.
True. They always clash like crazy. So it's the dynamics of this episode was ridiculously good, but it was fun. It was really, really good. It was a good chuckle. Like, you laughed a lot. For it to be such a serious moment with literally so many different people's futures on the line, it was a really funny moment. So,
yeah, and it's one of my favorite parts of, like, any little shonen-type anime. It's a special training.
Right. the preparation before the big battle.
Yeah. So
Yeah, it was pretty good.
these next few episodes should be fun.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to see how the core, or well, I guess you could call them the core four. I can't wait to see how these four are gonna basically work out everything and see if they can actually get back to the freedom of their friends, get them back into the school and stuff like that. It's gonna be a pretty dope ending to this season, guaranteed. Yeah. All right. So with that, that basically catches us up on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday anime. Our next podcast, we're going to try to shoot for Thursday, which will be in 2 days. We'll go over animes from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So look forward to another full list of anime to go over.
Nice little podcast.
Yes. Yes, nice, nice, lengthy one. Give you all the meat and potatoes you can handle. So, with that, signing out from the Male Knocker Mixer is Black and Stentonator. Until next time, catch you guys later. Peace.